Have you ever had a dream that you want him to do you so much you could do anything?
TBTL.
Well, more bodily functions in the news this morning. The next time you pass gas, make sure no police are around.
Hey, guys. You ready to let the dogs out?
What?
Do what? Let the dogs out. You know, like, who let the dogs out? Who?
So I was like, of course, dogs are mammals, right? Yeah, dogs are mammals. They're humans. Or no, they're not human. They're part of the animal kingdom. But dogs can't talk. So do they have brains?
If you want to pick a fight with your body's sexual chi, it's just going to drive it inwards. And that invites disease. Death.
For one thing, I have no shame before another mortal. All my shame is between myself and Christ. I'll never drop my eyes to another human being.
Let's get one thing straight. I'm the funny guy around here.
You hear that, Rudog? I don't want any more argument about it, okay? I am the cute one. And you are the one who sits there in that houndstooth. Wow. I don't know if I've mentioned this before. It just occurred to me that the dog's dog bed, the pattern that is printed on it is houndstooth, which is kind of, as we say on this show, it's kind of meta. Hi, everyone. Welcome, one and all, to a Wednesday afternoon edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
It tastes like soot and hot water. I'm hooked.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
This guy is a 4.5 foot tall pile of awesomeness.
4 feet 9 inches in heels, okay? So don't forget about that. Coming to you from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City, as mentioned.
I'll say, what's up, dog?
Pod Dog is in here, supervising the sort of goings-ons over the course of the next hour or so, which, of course, is episode 2731 in a collector series. The imaginary radio show that many of you turn to day in and day out for a variety of topics. Yesterday, including what did we get into yesterday? How quickly it all flies out of my mind. I can tell you what we're going to do on today's show, and I can tell you that it's going to be interesting. It's going to be scintillating.
Let the fun begin.
It's going to involve a couple of guys from Boston who found something in the roadway, so they say. And they may have reached, as it's described, peak Boston when they found this special item.
We had no idea what it was. First thing I said, this belongs to the Red Sox. This is for Fenway Park.
Yeah.
It was not a tuner, bro. Although you could be forgiven for confusing what they found with a tuner, bro. We'll talk about that and the latest developments in the story. It's actually sort of, this is a breaking story that we'll be following all afternoon on TBTL. The question of what these guys found in the road, if they in fact found it in the road, and if it needs to be returned to the Red Sox, or if they can get some kind of money for it. So we'll do that. We've got some killer emails and V-mails. And we've got this guy. It's like he's walking on sunshine. His milkshake brings the vast majority of the boys to the yard. He's sorry he's tan. It just feels good. He's Andrew...
Pretty Scoop Scoop. Poop.
Walsh, and he joins us now from the Roosevelt neighborhood, Seattle, Washington. Hello, my cobro.
That's a good drop. Who's that kiddo?
It's a kid named Grayson, and I believe you may have even been the one who sent it to me because it's titled Grayson _ Kanye. Oh. Or maybe Grayson's parent sent it to me. I thought we played that.
I think we did. Luke, I'm known for a lot of things. Remembering things is not one of them.
I really took over the title of guy who can't remember things on this show yesterday. The other day I couldn't remember Jay Cutler, the former football player. Then yesterday's show was like 2 hours plus because we had a no point conversion. Stu from internet texted us and said, "Great job, guys, on 2+ hours." But I was like, "Yeah, but." an hour of it was me just trying to remember names.
You're talking to the guy who couldn't remember Baker Mayfield's name. Baker Mayfield, possibly one of the most talked about football players in the league, who plays backup but plays for my beloved Cleveland Browns. I couldn't think of his name. So you're still, I still think you're head and shoulders above me when it comes to this.
Well, the bar may be fairly low if I'm comparing myself to you, but true. I'm not happy about it because I've been clean living, Andrew. I've been taking a little break on my drinking. I've been getting ready for this half marathon. I've been getting just ludicrous. I've been getting handsome stranger at a Whole Foods in Atlanta amounts of sleep. Last night, got together with some tens up here in Bellingham at this very cool new spot that I didn't know about that's like 8 minutes, not even 5 minutes from our house, called Twin Sisters Brewery in Bellingham. Met up with some tens there, had a little bite to eat, chatted. It was fun. Came back home. I was home by like 10 o'clock, got in bed, went to sleep, woke up this morning at 10 a.m., Andrew.
Wow. 10
and
to 10.
Closed my eyes. I'm sorry. I know this is like a sleep. I'm sleep bragging, and a lot of our
peace and love, peace and love.
A lot of our listeners aren't able to get a bunch of sleep because either they don't sleep well, or they have kids, or weird job schedules, or they're busy. I understand that. I'm not trying to rub this in anyone's face, but closed my eyes about 10 o'clock at night. Opened them. It was 10 in the morning. It's 12 hours of sleep. Got up. I felt exhausted. Now
really?
I feel really good. It's been a while. And my systems are, everything's running on all cylinders. But I've been practicing major self care. I've been getting a ton of sleep. I've been exercising. I've been eating relatively right. I've been leaving the booze juice alone. Like, I can't remember Jay Cutler's name. Apparently my body is designed to run on a steady diet of alcohol, no sleep, and questionable trips to the local casino. That is apparently what fuels this engine that is Luke Burbank.
There, I was reading about this actually quite a while ago. I thought this is pretty mainstream science at this point, but it is known that if you want to remember things, alcohol helps. It's called brain lubricant, and if you're not drinking a lot, all of your memories kind of get stuck and clogged up in one place, and they can't make their way to the frontal vortex.
The forget me shot.
Yeah, and so what you need to do is you need to drink a lot to keep those memories moving around in there, whether they're memories of somebody's name like Jay Cutler or things you've done. Mm-hmm. That's kind of basic science at this point.
You need your brain gravy to slosh around in there and keep everything wet.
Exactly.
Do you get wet?
Is that a Tim and Eric? What was that? Or are you just freelancing?
I think that's something that in the movie Training Day, I believe that Denzel Washington says that. Do you get wet to Ethan Hawke's character?
He doesn't say brain gravy, though.
No, he does not.
Oh, okay. I was like, I cannot. I've never seen that movie, but I'm just like trying to picture Denzel Washington saying, brain gravy in there.
Here we go. Let's
open. Yeah, I know you got secrets. Everybody got secrets. Didn't know you like to get wet, though.
What's wet?
Butt naked. Ill. Germ. Dust. PCP. Primo. P-Dog. That's what you had.
Ethan Hawke has ingested some kind of drug, I think, accidentally, and he's starting to become confused because of the power of the drug, and Denzel Washington, who's sort of crooked cop in L.A., is explaining to him, what's going on with him now. Do you get wet?
And in this case, so if I'm following this correctly, so getting wet is a slang for getting high?
I think so.
Wow.
I think so.
How have I never heard of that?
I don't think it's very famous yet.
Yet.
I feel like Camaro Kev says it sometimes, offhandedly. I feel like he has said it at times, maybe on Stack of Dimes, in a way that made me think people who watch the movie Training Day a lot know about that.
I see. Yeah.
I'm not one of them, although where I used to live in LA was just down the street, just down Sunset from where the pivotal scene in Training Day is. And I remember watching the movie Training Day, which I did see when it came out, and then being in my neighborhood in L.A. and driving up turnaround U-turn street, looking out over downtown L.A., I'm like, oh, my God, this is where Training Day happened.
Ah.
It felt very, I was starstruck by this neighborhood being where some of Training Day was shot. And then over the years of living in L.A., I would become pretty used to that. It's pretty typical. But I remember being like, this is where Denzel Washington and Ethan Hawke were one time. I recognize this.
My experience in L.A. was usually the opposite. I'd be watching a movie or a TV show, and then I would see a scene that I knew from real life. I don't know if I've ever like kind of been driving around and being like, oh, you know, that's, you know, that... That's where such and such happens in a movie. But sometimes you'll be watching a movie and be like, oh, shit, that's across the street from MacArthur Park or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I just want to say, by the way, thanks to everybody who came out last night to Twin Sisters here in Bellingham. We did not get wet that I know of. I left before people got wet.
Wait, was this did I not drink enough to remember this, too? Was this an announced kind of meetup, or was this just something you were doing on the side?
I think it was on Facebook. I don't know. I got an email from one of the folks here in Bellingham and said, we're going to have this get-together. If you can make it by, that'd be great. And I did make it by.
Good turnout.
It was a nice – there was a table full of people. In fact, well, by the time I showed up, there was exactly the right amount of people for the table. And so then I, like, dragged my seat in and was sort of, like, messing up the – I was technically messing up the seating arrangement, but everybody was very nice about it, and it was a nice time. It was nice to catch up with some tens and meet some new people and meet a guy who's a million miler on Alaska Airlines.
Oh wow!
He's an 11. He's the husband of listener Lisa, and I was just like it was like I was Ethan Hawke and he was Dustin, and he was Denzel Washington in Training Day. He was the master and I was the student because like I fly a lot. And I've got all my stories, but I'm still hundreds and hundreds of thousands of miles from having flown a million miles on Alaska Airlines.
Oh, God. I thought a million miler meant that he had sex on airplanes. I'm sorry, I was confused for part of that.
If you fly a million miles on Alaska Airlines, you have like gold status for life. You see how I'm just moving on? See how I'm just leaving?
Was it a bad joke or was it just not TVTL necessarily appropriate? Because I feel like it was kind of a good joke. No?
No, I'm not saying it was the worst joke. I didn't have a good follow-up. One of the things
sure.
I'm trying to do now,
sure. Just
one of
on.
The things I'm trying to do, if I don't have anything to add to the joke
yeah.
or the riff, I'm trying to just move on now. This is my new thing, calling people bozo, and I'm just trying to move on because we lose a lot of time with me then trying to, like, and I'm not saying your joke needed help. I'm saying that I didn't have anything that would improve that joke, so... Just keep it moving. That's my new strategy.
Could you just add just one line? Just be like, that's a funny joke, and then move on. That would just do a lot.
I think
for
what I've been using
me
for your ego. I mean, I've been using this.
I cannot believe you right. just told that joke.
Sure. I've been using that when I don't know what to say. But then that almost makes it sound like it was a bad joke or it was inappropriate. I'm not even saying that. Now let's say the Mile High Club, of course, is if somebody has some kind of sex times on an airplane, you're in the Mile High Club. By the way, shout out to McCoy Colvin. This is a good time for me to think of this. One of our younger listeners who's currently nursing a broken arm. Don't ask your parents about the Mile High Club.
Oh, no.
They won't let you listen to TBTL anymore. McCoy's got a broken arm maybe because his dad, Josh, pushed him a little bit too excitedly on a swing in Anacortes.
No.
That's for the authorities to decide. I'll let their family work that out. But anyway, McCoy, I hope your arm feels better, and thanks for listening to TBTL. So if the joke is that a million miler is somebody who's having adult times on an airplane, but of course the Mile High Club, that's about 5,000 feet, right? Isn't a mile roughly 5,000 feet?
I'm going to go with you on that.
So does that mean it was a really good time if you're in the Million Miler Club? Like you were
– yeah.
How many – like you were 200 – you were like – I can't do the math in the back of my head. You were 200 times higher than just the Mile High Club. If you're in the Million Mile Club, is that just like somebody saw God during the experience? Is that the best Mile High Club you could ever be in, the Million Mile Club?
I would think – here's what I would like to do. I'm going to just open this up to the listeners. If you have any way of saving that joke that I told that totally derailed this conversation, email me at andrew@tbtl.net. Let me know.
I cannot believe he just told that
joke. Let me know how you would maybe fix
how
that
would
joke.
You, it's sort of like a choose
I'm
your own
so
adventure,
funny.
But it's – it's fix your own podcast where you
– right.
Give us sort of your best opinion on how we could have done a joke better or how we could have built on something. I feel bad for Grayson.
Pretty scoops.
Oh, Grayson, that's on me.
Who now has to – he has to learn about the Million Mile Club on the streets instead of learning it, you know. from his parents or in school or one of the appropriate places. He's learned about it now on TBTL, which is not good.
Will you allow me, speaking of podcasts, I had something that I wanted to jam in here. I was going to ask you if I could do this before the show today, but I see we're right at break time. But can I just squeeze in, like, this is just a straight up self-promotion. That's something that I wanted to mention on the show. Thanks for allowing me to do this here. I guess I put you in a position where it'd be weird if you said no. But I had mentioned on the show, 2 weeks ago or something, that Hannah and I had recorded an episode of our new podcast, Spotless, all about cleaning.
Yeah.
And I kind of mentioned that we're trying to get it on iTunes, and it hadn't been on iTunes. And then later that afternoon, it got on iTunes. So we're now on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can go to spotlesspod.com if you want to check it out. You might not want to. I don't want to force anybody to do anything they want to do or listen to podcasts they want to listen to. But if you want a podcast to listen to while you're cleaning and you want to hear a couple of doofuses talking about cleaning, Hannah is not a doofus, while you do that,
no.
Give it a shot. It's called Spotless Pod, and you can find it. There's also another thing called Spotless on iTunes, but you'll be able to tell which one is us.
I'm surprised there aren't a lot of things called Spotless. Like, two is lower, a smaller number than I would have expected.
Yeah, I saw one on there, and it's almost exactly what happened when Veeves and I started After These Messages. We had looked to make sure there wasn't already a show called After These Messages, and then some guy launched it right, like, a week before we did. Like, we, you know, settled on a name, made logos at all these things, and then he launched it, his. But Veeves and I were like, we're going to stick to a regular schedule. And you know, eventually we could just tell. We had a feeling that this other podcast wouldn't be in the long haul. And it was true. Like, now we've been into this for, I don't know, actually exactly 150 episodes, and he did 7 and then disappeared.
Congratulations.
Thanks. That was yesterday, 150. Now I'm just promoting everything. But anyway, Spotless, this other one, looks like it's, I don't even know, it might be a tech podcast or something, but it doesn't look like they've published in, like, they did like 10 episodes and haven't published since a year or something.
I get it. So this is what you're bringing to the game. You're like, you know, some have tried and some have died, but nobody's been able to put out a podcast on the reg like Andrew Lewis Walsh. So you're like, great, Spotless, get at me. After These Messages. You just know that you're going to outlast all of them. You're going to do more shows, and you're going to do them more regularly than the other shows of a similar name. And so the differentiation will become clear.
I think so, yeah. I think that. Now,
like
Hannah and I are thinking.
Swagger.
Podcasts are the future of show business.
Now, I actually wouldn't mind your opinion on this, although we should break and we shouldn't waste a lot of time with this. I really did just want to kind of announce that if people are interested in Spotless, you can find it wherever you find podcasts. And Hannah put together a cool website called spotlesspod.com. Anyway, what do you think? We're going to start by doing it once a month, Luke, because this show takes a little bit more prep and, like, kind of thinking ahead, because we want to try out products and try out various cleaning techniques that people send to us and kind of do a little bit more forward thinking on it. And I don't have tons, you know, I don't have time. Well, maybe I do have tons of time, but I thought maybe just starting doing it once a month. But is that a terrible idea? Can you even develop an audience if you're only dropping a show once every 31 days?
I think so. I think it really depends on what your aspiration for it is too. And I think you can definitely develop an audience. And I think also, if you, let's say you do it every month for a year and people are really digging it and you're getting a lot of questions, and I think you could go to every other week pretty fast.
Once
it's rolling, I think it'll be easier to do more of them. But I don't think there's anything wrong with making the only thing, it sounds like you're already kind of going with it. The only thing you maybe could have done would be to record, like, have 3 or 4 episodes kind of already, like, done and in the bank, and then just release them with Serial or one of those shows. Those things take a long time to make, and they're not doing like one episode a week. They're really doing 4 episodes a year or something, but I feel like they usually have a bunch of them ready to go, and then they just kind of are dropping them
You know what?
On a weekly basis.
Yeah, because we had talked about that, and that's, you know, that's a really good model for some shows, and it would make sense in some ways, but I really, like, the one thing, and I get this from TBTL, really, or even TBTL or the thing, or just, like, the regular commercial radio stuff that we listen to, or I listen to, sports radio and stuff like that, is I like the idea of each show somehow being somehow, you know, it's kind of a narrative or one, you know, the show before leads to something that goes into the next show. Mm-hmm. Nothing official, but, you know, especially if we're going to be a show that's really based on listener feedback, maybe on the first show. As a matter of fact, here's a perfect example. Hannah just dropped the word scrub jockeys on during the show. She said something like she used to work for some cleaning company.
I don't want no.
I know.
A scrub jockey is a guy who can't get no love from me.
A scrub jockey is a guy who can't sit down for 2 seconds while I'm trying to watch TV because he keeps on trying to vacuum. That would be Genevieve's version of that song. But anyway, like for that, that's a good example. Like she didn't plan on saying scrub jockeys, I don't think. She was describing her work experience as a I guess they would go – she worked with some other college students who would go around and they had a private business cleaning, I think, institutions or, you know, like buildings, not homes. Yeah. And she just – once she said, yeah, me and the scrub jockeys got in the truck. And I just thought that was hilarious. Now episode two, you know, I think scrub jockey might become part of our vernacular. I guess that would still happen if you recorded them all in the same day. But I don't know. I'm just hoping that this is one of those things, not unlike TBTL, where people will write in their stories and like kind of – I didn't want to have a bunch of stuff sound canned because I want it to sound kind of organic as the show kind of moves on, you know?
I know you're very – even when we were doing – that kind of like Hey Dummies radio show idea that we pitched to Boston and stuff. I know that you are very intrigued by the idea of having a good running dialogue with the listeners.
Yeah.
Where like their people are sending in ideas and questions and then you're hearing back later on how they did with like that thing. And I think that's a fun show too. And that's what I think ultimately might push you to wanting to do it a couple times a month. But it's also important to just be able to like, you don't want this to become a burden for you
I
and
make
for
sure
Hannah to
do
produce.
It. Yeah.
And you want them to be good. So, yeah, I think that's great. I think once a month can totally work.
And now I know that I'm trying to bury another podcast called Spotless. I'm especially motivated.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Jerks.
Revenge is a dish best served cold. Let's take a quick break. I want to remind folks that September 26th, a Wednesday night, we will be at Safeco Field watching the Mariners play the A's. And really, let's be honest. Talking to all of you, the tens of listeners, if you want to come out to the game, if you would like to get a T-shirt that says Go Mariners, Go Eat a Bagel, and if you'd like to hang out with us, you can go to mariners.com/TBTL, mariners.com/TBTL to get your ticket so we can all be sitting together.
And
so,
there's a little meetup I wanted to throw in there, too. Our buddy Christy says a bunch of folks are going to be meeting at Henry's Tavern Beer Garden at 5 p.m. before the game. Game's at 7, so they'll be meeting at Henry's Tavern at 5. It's all ages. They have beer, wine, liquor, and food, says Christy. So swing by there for a little pre-funk if you're into it.
That Henry's has also got a one of those bars that's like frozen. Like ice on it, so you put your beer on there. Your beer never gets warm.
I always hear that in their commercials, Henry's Tavern. Henry's Tavern, it's like one of those things. It's just a bar in Seattle, but because I hear promos or commercials for Henry's Tavern, I don't know, five times an hour on sports radio. Like, I think I passed Henry's Tavern in the car or something the other day, maybe when I was at the game with you. And I was like, oh, the legendary Henry's Tavern. I'm like, wait, it's not legendary. It's just a restaurant that advertises, but it's funny.
Since 2016.
Right. It's just like, it really got, ooh, do they have the, actually, I think the commercial does say something about their legendary ice bar, or whatever you call the ice-covered bar that you were just describing. So I got excited, and I was like, wow, that's the power of just advertising, just hammering a message over and over and over again. Suddenly I felt the place was very special.
La leyenda de Borracho Frio. I think it's like the legend of the drunk frozen guy.
Great.
I think probably a good sign. It's time to pause, hit refresh, and then come back and do the rest of this here show. So stay with us. It's TBTL. We will be back in just a moment.
We had no idea what it was. First thing I said, this belongs to the Red Sox. This is for Fenway Park.
Yeah. How did we never get the ad buy from stamps.com? I feel like that would have been a perfect. We're the only podcast not doing ads for that company.
That is
and
a
we
really
had the
good
perfect,
point.
The perfect modern lover song for the
I
for
know.
The job.
We got to get on that.
All right. Let's see here. Why don't we do this? Why don't we mix things up a little bit? We're going to go right into top stories.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
A mere 25 or so minutes into the show.
What?
This is some kind of a record. I know. Also, I'm excited about these emails and V-mails today. I don't know what they are, but yesterday when we had to skip the email segment, you said we got some Ooh. Some doozies.
We do. We have a couple good ones, yeah.
This piece of tape was forwarded to us by one Chris Hayes of All In with Chris Hayes on MSNBC, who's we joke about him being our unpaid bidet correspondent, senior bidet correspondent, other things. And, of course, part of the joke is the asymmetry of our relationship professionally. He hosts a television show that's really popular and watched by people like Bill Murray. And we do this. And yet, I'm not exaggerating when I say probably 30% of the stuff we do is show ideas mm-hmm. and topic ideas he sends us. Like, he's got a lot of important jobs to do. He's a father of three. He's fighting a dad bod, as I see mm-hmm. regularly on his Instagram feed.
And winning.
He's hosting a major television. Yes. Hashtag winning. He's hosting a hit television show. He's writing books left and right. He's hosting a podcast that's more popular than this one. And somehow in the midst of all that, he's also sending us articles that we then literally use to make our show. So thanks for that, Chris. And also stop rubbing it in. There was a couple guys in Somerville, Massachusetts, who found an item in the roadway, so they say, and were interviewed by the Boston Globe about this particular item. We've actually got the audio here from the Globe. It's two guys, and I'm pausing because it's like they don't. I don't think I'm spoiling anything to say what they found was a giant banner from Fenway Park, or that was intended to be hung up in Fenway Park, where the Boston Red Sox play. But these two guys, not unlike That's a Tuner Bro, the Boston area fisher people who are or boaters who are out in the water and saw a mysterious fish. We've played that audio a million times on the show. These guys are so out of central casting, Andrew. I watched this video probably four times trying to figure out if this was some kind of a viral stunt. If these are two sort of like my name is Chad and I'm a house party enthusiast, like those guys that showed up at that city council meeting in California, they were in fact comedians. They were just joking with this local council. The whole thing was basically performance art. I watched this video multiple times to try to figure out if this was performance art because these guys are so straight out of central casting for being sort of Massachusetts bros. I'll just play you a little bit of this audio. If you need us to pause it or whatever, let me know, Andrew, if we need to clarify.
Now, we have our coffee. We're driving on McGrath Highway in Somerville, and I noticed a couple cars swinging, like moving to the right, and we seen something in the street. And he's like, Louie, what is that? What is? I'm like, I don't know. I don't. What is it?
Okay, now I'm pausing it because along with the That's a Tuner Bro video, there seems to be in Boston a lot of guys asking their guy friend what something is.
Yeah, right.
You went to Boston. Yeah.
Hey, Jay, what is that?
Jay says what is it's a that, fucking kid? Tuna.
Like the guy talking to Jay the whole time when they're looking at the tuna. And then this one where like they're driving in the car, presumably having left Dunkin' Donuts. And they're like, what is that, man? Like, it's a very like it seems culturally like a thing where you got to check in with your bro about what something is that you're both seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not from Boston. We have a lot of listeners in Boston, actually. So they can probably let us know if this is accurate or not. But as far as the two viral videos I've noted of guys in Boston, it seems like a thing they do.
And we seen something in the street. And he's like, Louie, what is that? What is it? I'm like, I don't know. I don't. What is it? So I ran across the highway to grab it. We brought it in the car. We had no idea what it was. It was wrapped up in a brown paper bag.
Okay, now I need to explain something that's happening at this part of the video. Clearly, the video producer from the Globe has asked them to unfurl the banner. And one of the guys, the sort of the silent J of the group. That's not true. Sorry, it's actually the main guy who's talking. As he's unfurling the banner and the camera person is obviously saying, okay, just stand there. I'm going to get some footage of you two holding this Boston Red Sox banner. the guy who's doing most of the talking in the video, he cannot stop himself from, while he's supposed to be basically, they're getting what's called B-roll. It's a moving picture without any talking going on. But he cannot stifle the urge, because he's on camera, to say, Boston's number one, the Yankees suck. Like, in the background. And I'm sure the camera person said, okay, just stand there and hold this. Mm-hmm. That's all the camera person needed. This guy could not stifle his Boston-ness long enough to just stand there and hold the banner. He had to say, and he does with his hand, like, the number one sign. Yeah, Red Sox are number one. Yankees suck. Tell me if you can hear this in the far background of this piece.
The highway to grab it. We brought it in the car. We had no idea what it was.
Right here. Boston.
It was wrapped up in a brown paper bag.
Boston.
First thing I
just muttering in the background.
If you stifle it, if you
Boston.
If you stifle your Boston-ness, that'll lead to disease, Luke. I mean, you can't
absolutely
stifle it.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
They said this belongs to the Red Sox. This is for Fenway Park.
Yeah.
Like, how do we have this? Like, nobody made this. This belongs to the park. I'm thinking that they hang it off the Green Monster.
Yep.
We want to give it back to them because it belongs to them, and it doesn't belong to us. Yep. But in reciprocation, we would like, you know, maybe to go to a nice playoff game. Or we're looking for something. We just don't want to hand it over to them.
Okay. Lots to unpack from that. First of all, he did use reciprocation correctly. So points on that. And I'm not even joking. Oh, this sounds. By the way, if one of our listeners is in Somerville, in fact, we've read that name during the donors of the day. If one of our listeners is in Somerville or somewhere else in the sort of greater, you could say, New England area, and it feels like we're just talking down to these guys, I apologize because, you know, if a couple guys in Boston were playing some tree hugger from Seattle and kind of having fun at their expense, I might get my back up a little bit. So when I say he used reciprocation properly, I'm not trying to be a super snob. I'm a little surprised that he used the word reciprocation basically exactly right in the context.
Yeah, and as
based on everything else I'd experienced as a viewer from this guy.
And your experience is also tainted by me, who, while not a Bostonian, am a guy who lived in New England for a while and misuses words all the time. So that's probably coloring your outlook,
that's
too.
That's mostly why I was doubtful of this guy's use of reciprocation, because of you being the co-brogan of this show. So what they're saying is, we found this banner in the road. It belongs to the Boston Red Sox. But we would also like to get some free shit for giving it back to them, even though they've stated by their own admission that it definitely belongs to the Boston Red Sox. But also, we'd like to get our beaks wet.
We would like, you know, maybe to go to a nice playoff game. Or we're looking for something. We just don't want to hand it over to them.
So it's basically not the Boston Red Sox banner then.
Yeah, I mean, they're
like, it's either the Boston Red Sox banner. Here you go. Sorry, you dropped your banner. Or we're not giving this back unless we get something.
And it gets, I'll let you hit play. It gets real kind of like just a touch of mafioso here in a little bit. Well, you know,
it does. It'd be a real shame if something happened to your deli.
Right.
Maybe you should pay us to make sure nothing happens.
Right. We need to negotiate here. We want to, we're looking for
we're working too.
Yeah.
I mean, my man had to run across three lanes of traffic.
We know that that's the...
This was another part of the video where I wondered, are they having a laugh?
Right.
Are these two improv comedians from Boston who are literally doing this just to mess with the Boston Globe and by extension, the world? Because this is such a great line. It's almost like, could he have uttered this with sincerity?
Right.
Where he says, my boy had to cross three lanes of traffic. Hold on, I messed up.
We're working here too.
Them because it belongs to them, and it doesn't belong to us. Yep. But in reciprocation, we would like, you know, maybe to go to a nice playoff game. Or we're looking for something. We just don't want to hand it over to them.
Right. I mean,
we need to negotiate here. We want to. We're looking for
We're working too.
Yeah.
I mean, my man had to run across three lanes of traffic.
But we know that that's the original one.
We were told there was only one made.
Yeah, we were told there was only one being made.
So at that point...
Now, wait,
who told him that?
Great question. Jay. Would recently come in from a successful tuna trip.
I don't know how many of these have been made, but Jay says
Jay,
only one.
Jay, how many of these have been made? I don't have the. I'm not watching the video anymore, Andrew. I'm just playing the audio, which I loaded into my computer. So I actually don't remember off the top of my head what does the banner say. Are you able to?
A look. And I could call it up. I think it says 2018 division champs. That's so
right because the Red Sox are having an amazing season.
Right.
I think they've already locked up the division.
They will tonight if they beat the Yankees.
And so. That's another part of the story. Obviously, this banner was on its way to Fenway to be used because of this accomplishment for this season. Because when I first watched the video, I was like, oh, maybe it was something. I wasn't paying very close attention to what the banner actually said. And I thought maybe it was something old from Fenway Park that they had just sort of found that had been taken down and replaced. But no, this was basically on its way to Fenway Park. And these two guys somehow came into the possession of it. More on that in a moment.
That tells us. But then they told us they had a duplicate. So if they do try to put a duplicate up, you best believe we're going to show up and say...
We have the right one.
That's not the right... That's not the original.
So we're hoping that they don't make one and they put the right one up.
Okay. No.
What? Come on, guys.
So these guys find a tuner bro in the street in Somerville. It's a banner. Now, listen, we've spent a lot talking about Burbank Sign Works, my dad's sign company. One of the things my dad makes are banners like this. I mean, not for necessarily for professional teams, but I've seen many of these type of things made at my dad's shop. They're not one-of-a-kind works of art. They are vinyl letters that are stuck on a white vinyl, giant piece of vinyl that is, or I should say, like maybe nylon fabric that is the banner itself. They're now like they think that they have like a piece of bunting from the Polo Grounds in New York or something.
Sure.
They think that they have a special timeless and irreplaceable artifact of Boston baseball history. No, they have a general banner that was probably cost a couple grand to make and that was on its way to the stadium. But the idea that they're like, we have the original. Like, they have a stamp of a plane flying upside down. They have a Jenny on their hands,
right?
Like, they have a Honus Wagner baseball card. Like, they're going to show up at Fenway Park with the original. Nah, listen, Jay. Forget what you said about tuners, bro. This is the original. This right here, don't believe that fake. This is an original. Like, they're going to show up and protest if the Red Sox have to make another banner because these two jabronis got the original banner on the way to the stadium.
I could see the fans really protesting, you know, if the fans realize, oh, my God, that's not the original nylon banner. By the way, so you guys can picture it. I'm going to say it's about 12. I'm looking at it now. I'm going to say it's about 12 feet long and maybe, 4 feet across or something. So to give you a sense. So it is a big piece. You know, it is a – sorry. I'm laughing because I'm watching the video again and I'm watching the shot of him holding up his number one – socks are number one. anyway, it's a really big sign. You think it would run in the thousands, huh? I was thinking hundreds, but I don't know about this stuff. You're the son of a
sign maker. I bet you that – yeah, I don't know the going rate. I think it'd be – well, Andrew, you know, you get into some grommets. That's a thing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You got to do.
That's some hardware.
Because, of course, you got to tie the banner to something. And then how do you tie it through the banner without the thing ripping out? That means you've got to put some grommets on the corners. Depending on how weatherproof you want it to be, depending on how long it's supposed to last. I don't know. Maybe a grand. I mean, I'd say go to my dad's Weebly website. and he's probably got all the pricing right there.
Ask him for a quote.
But, yeah, even just transportation costs. I bet you it costs a couple grand for the Red Sox to get that banner.
Sure.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Hoping they do the right thing. Yep. You know, we did the right thing. We could have kept it. We could have put it on eBay. We could have, we got connections where we could have reached out to other sources.
Okay. So that's where it sounds like mobs. We're just hoping they do. Yeah. I know my accent's terrible. Just forgive me. But, we're just trying to do the right thing here. I hope they're going to do the right thing. I mean, we have connections. We could have gone another route here, but we did the right thing. I really hope that you'll do the right thing.
I mean, look, I don't want to sound I have said on I've said many times I'm a fairly amoral person, unfortunately. Like, I wish I was a little bit more morally upright. But even I would say, you're not doing the right thing. The right thing is you found something that obviously belongs to an organization. And the right thing is to just return it to them because it's clearly their thing. But you're but you're saying we're doing the right thing. Now you got to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not how the right thing works. It seems so obvious to me. Like, I can't believe these guys consider themselves to be modern day heroes. I guess you could make this one argument, which is you drug it out of traffic, if that's exactly what happened. And so you sort of prevented it from getting destroyed. But the other thing is, what you should have done, it would seem, is kept the banner and just hung it up in your backyard. You're obviously Red Sox fans. You're from Boston or you're from Somerville. They look like, if that's their house, I don't know, if the house they're standing in front of, kind of actually cool old house. Like, it's like a perfect house. It has a front porch, a big front porch kind of wrap around. It's like the perfect house to hang this banner from. And when the Red Sox presumably go to the World Series, you just hang the banner from your porch and enjoy it. Free banner.
By the way, like, if they had tried to sell this on eBay, do you think that it would have – I bet you would have come down in a second, right? Word would have spread. The organization would have got involved.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I guess if it says Red Sox on it, you need permission from the team. There's a trademark issue there. But, like, you could get one of these made. Like, you could have called the same company that made this for the Red Sox. And you could have said, hey, I need a banner that says Boston Red Sox 2018 division champs. And presumably they would just make it for you. Like, if you were a bar and you wanted to have one, if you were just wanted to hang it from your house because you were excited. Like, this is not special MLB gear or like, it's not – it's a very achievable goal to have something like this as a normal person.
Right.
Again, if technically speaking, if you use the Red Sox logo, they could stop you from doing that, depending on if you were trying to make money off of this. But if you wanted to get one of these made, it would be a very doable thing. So I'm just confused by it. I feel like they got a free banner. They should have just enjoyed it. Putting it on eBay, I don't know if the Red Sox had heard about it. Maybe the Red Sox would have been like, hey, what are you doing with our sign? But it's also very possible just some other Red Sox fan would have bought it, been like, oh, cool. Here, I'll bid $200 for that. I'm going to hang it up at my house.
Sure. By the way, quick aside here. I've been over here doing some real, like, kind of CSI style investigating, like enhance style, because our friend Caitlin,
and the quarterback is toast.
Yes, our friend Caitlin sent me this story as well. Caitlin has been mentioned on the show many times. I don't think she's been on the show, but she also sent me this video, and then she followed up by saying, "I just noticed that the guy in the red shirt, the T-shirt has an image of, it's like a mouse trap made out of $100 bills, which is just kind of an interesting thing. But it says something underneath it, because I was trying to figure out, like, what is this logo? Is this for a band? Is it about like some sort of like kind of money trap kind of situation? Got to get your cheddar. And I saw that in this video, there's a little bit of writing underneath. It's very grainy, but I'm pretty sure it says Hustle Gang of 2003. So this man might belong to the Hustle Gang of 2003. I could be wrong about this.
He's gang affiliated.
Yeah.
I keep saying Somerville because I guess that's where they were driving. I want to be correct. This guy lives in Malden.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they mentioned
found
Somerville. Though. Okay, yeah.
The sign was apparently found, so he says in Somerville, but the guy lives in Malden, the guy who actually found the sign, Louis Ayakuzi, a 44-year-old man from Malden. I'm also looking at a picture now. It just says – I mean, this is like – it just says 2018 in huge numbers, and then it has the Red Sox logo, and then it says American League East Champs. Other than the Red Sox, the actual Red Sox logo, I don't think there's even anything on here that would be trademarked. The number 2018 is not trademarkable, nor is American League East Champions probably. I mean, this is a very general – this is a fairly generic thing that he's found. I would have loved – for the Red Sox to get the new one made. Yeah, maybe that's a grand as I'm looking at it, Andrew. Maybe a grand for that banner. I would have loved for the Red Sox to hang up the reproduction and for these two guys to show up and be like, we got the real one here. Like, to just see how that would play out. I would have paid money to see that protest movement. I don't know if the plot thickens or thins here, but basically what happened was the Red Sox eventually, when this video went up and when the story made it into the Boston Globe, the Red Sox and the guy who made the banner in the first place heard about it, and they're not particularly pleased. Tony LaFuente is a one-time alderman in Somerville. He also owns a company called Flag Graphics. It's the company that made the banner. And he said he wasn't sure if this banner that these guys were holding fell off a truck or if it walked off the truck. He said, I've been doing work for the Boston Red Sox since 1992. Nothing has ever happened like this. He also added, we already have a new banner made. So,
yeah,
basically, they got to presumably they got to Fenway Park and they unloaded things and they were like, shit, where's the 2018 banner? I don't know. Fell off the truck. We didn't bring it. Can't find it. Make a new one. And Fan Graphics made a new one. So the unfortunately, these guys have a fairly limited amount of leverage at this point.
Yeah. And he also, he stops kind of beating around the bush. Later on in the interview, he just comes out and says, these guys stole my banner. They should be ashamed of themselves. This is not Boston. So now he's just like straight up Jacuzzi.
Let's see. Iacuzzi, the guy who found the banner, who now was interviewed a third time, apparently, by the Boston Globe in response to being called a thief, a banner thief. He says, they lost the bleep. They're the ones that bleeped up. I found it. I'm trying to do the right thing. If I didn't pick it up, 100 people would have ran over it. I don't want $1 million. I don't need $1 million. All I wanted was to maybe bring my family and my friends to a bleeping baseball game. Maybe meet a player. Maybe hit cleanup. I added that part. The flag is back home with the Boston Red Sox. He also lamented, I should mention, Iannucci eventually returned the banner for nothing to the team. The Boston Globe writes that he lamented his newfound notoriety. I want to tell you guys something. I found the flag, Iacuzzi said. I was never looking for money or fame or anything. I wanted to return it ever since I seen it. The Red Sox can clinch the division title tonight if they defeat the Yankees in the Bronx. So the 2018 banner has been reunited with the team. Apparently, this guy got nothing for it, and is mad at the implication that he wanted money, even though he at some point he I don't know if he said he wanted money, but he definitely seemed to think that some reciprocity was in order.
Yeah, I love that follow-up. To me, that adds so much juice to the story. I mean, that the sign maker is straight up saying, this walked off my truck, these guys stole it. Now I'm thinking, what did that scenario potentially look like or allegedly look like, right? Like, did they break into this?
I doubt they stole this.
I don't think
Here's
so.
Here's why. If they, this would be a weird caper. I doubt that they would steal it and then call this much attention to it. Also, they would have not stolen a particularly compelling banner. Like, I know there's got to be another banner that says Boston Red Sox, and then there's one that says 2018 AL East Champs. They stole the worst of the two banners, if in fact they did this as a caper. And again, I think it probably genuinely fell off the truck, which is funny because if you watch The Sopranos, that's always the joke about like any kind of ill-gotten item. It's like, it fell off a truck. This probably legit fell off a truck, but like, instead of just calling, I bet you these guys would have gotten some free tickets. If they would have, like, they would have called the Red Sox organization and say, hey, we found something. I think it belongs to you. And you want to send someone out to pick it up? If you would have just done that, I bet you anything the Red Sox organization, to show their appreciation, would have thrown you some tickets. But this whole, like, holding it hostage and, like, being kind of butthurt. And then I love that quote from Iannucci where he says, all I wanted was to maybe bring my family and my friends. Well, okay, let's just stop there. Every Red Sox game is sold out, particularly this time of year, particularly going into the playoffs. So all Iannucci wanted for this, let's just take the high estimate and say $1,000 banner. All he wanted was roughly $2,000 in tickets from the Boston Red Sox. All I wanted was to maybe bring my family and my friends to a bleeping baseball game. Okay, right there, let's just say his family has a spouse and they have three kids. It's five people. His friends, how many friends does he have from down the bar? Let's say it's 10 guys. That's a lot of friends. Let's say it's five guys. Now we're talking family plus friends, 10 tickets. For the American League Championship Series, you're looking at least probably $400 a ticket, maybe $300. So now we're talking about $1,500 or more. No, wait, $3,000 of tickets, if I'm doing this math right. He wants $3,000 of tickets, 10 tickets, whatever it adds up to. It's a lot of money. It's not nothing. And then he throws on there, all I wanted was maybe bring my family and my friends to a baseball game, maybe meet a player. Okay, now we got to go. Somebody has to go get one of the Boston Red Sox and bring them like up to Gary Sanchez. Okay, could we get you to come meet this guy who found a banner in the road in Somerville?
Right.
Yeah, I know. We already gave him $2,500 worth of tickets, but we just feel like it's the least we can do. It's going to mean you can't meet with those Make-A-Wish kids.
Right.
But they've had it too good. Let's go meet with this guy Iannucci from Malden because he did us the greatest service of all time, which he found a banner that basically completed a thought. A banner that said 2018 so that the Boston Red Sox banner was not lonely and was not meaningless. We owe him everything now.
So this guy found what now? That would be the response from any self-respecting Red Sox. Wait, hold on. This guy did what? He found a, huh?
I have to go where? Why? Huh? I don't think that this was a hoax. Like, I don't think these guys were just trying to be funny. But honestly, this would have been a great spoof if they pulled this off. I'm thinking of it because there was a guy whose name is not at the tip of my brain because I had literally never heard of him until he passed away recently. He was, his obituary was in the New York Times. And the New York Times went to great lengths to mention this guy who had passed away. He was elderly at this point. He was in his – I think he was maybe 90 or his late 80s. They went to great, great lengths to clarify that he had in fact passed away. Why? Because he had one time convinced the New York Times that he had died when he hadn't died. And he was sort of this professional prankster who did all kinds of – mostly in the 70s and 80s, all kinds of weird hoaxes that were meant to basically point out – They were supposed to be social commentaries, and I don't have the guy's name in front of me, but I ended up reading all about his life. He had a kind of an interesting life. At one point, when there was, I think that there was some sort of a, there was a complaint going around about modesty. And so this guy, as a joke, decided to start this organization that's whole goal was to clothe animals that were seen in public. Like if you were to see like a horse in public, you would need to be wearing clothing. He formed this organization as a total joke, but people started really getting into it, and chapters started forming all over the country of this society for clothing, like farm animals and other animals that were seen in public. People got real about it. Somebody sent him a $40,000 donation, which he said he did not cash the check, even though he was tempted to. He was always creating these kind of weird sort of events and fake news stories that were getting picked up, and they were all kind of with the intent of pointing out some kind of hypocrisy in our society.
Hypocrisy or exposing journalistic laziness?
I was more, I think, about hypocrisy. I don't think his job – I don't think his goal was to just befuddle journalists.
Oh, okay.
I think he would use that on the way to – making his larger point, but I think,
oh, I see, like a larger point about modesty when it comes to the human body,
right.
Shame, and okay, gotcha.
Right. So he did that. He, I'm trying to do this off the top of my brain, which we've already established is bad, but he just throughout his life, and he basically was sort of a professional prankster. His pranks, though, were all pretty. Like I said, they were pretty innocent. Like they were. Now I'm going to have to do this. NYT. I had thought the other day about maybe talking about this guy. Let's see if I can.
Oh, this is something you
Alan
came across
Abel.
Recently. Okay.
Yeah, he just died recently. His name was Alan Abel. And I'm just going to take because I've already his daughter made a documentary about him, which was pretty amazing. Actually, I watched a little bit of it. Alan Abel, hoaxer extraordinaire, is on good authority dead at 94.
On good authority.
In 1980, he convinced the New York Times that he had actually died, and they wrote an obit about him, which apparently was Mr. Abel's putative 1980s death, orchestrated with his characteristic military precision and involving a dozen accomplices, had been confirmed by the Times by several rigorously several rigorously rehearsed Confederates. One masqueraded as the grieving widow, another posed as an undertaker, answering fact-checking calls from the newspaper on a dedicated phone line that Mr. Abel had installed, complete with its own directory information business listing. After the obituary was published, Mr. Abel, symbolically rising from the grave, held a gleeful news conference, and a much abashed Times ran a retraction. Long before the Onion began printing farcical news articles, and long before the Yes Men enacted their first culture-jamming political pranks, there was Alan Abel, a former jazz drummer and stand-up comic, who was later a writer, campus lecturer, and filmmaker. Mr. Abel was best known as a perennial public gadfly, a self-appointed calling that combined the verbal pyrotechnics of a 19th century flim-flam man with the acute 20th century media savvy. He was, the news media conceded with a kind of irritated admiration, an American original in the mold of P.T. Barnum, a role model whom Mr. Abel reverently acknowledged. A master psychologist, keen strategist, and possessor of an enviable deadpan and a string of handy aliases, Mr. Abel had an almost unrivaled ability to divine exactly what a harried news media wanted to hear and then give it to them, irresistibly gift-wrapped. At the spate of news conferences he orchestrated over the years, the frequent presence of comely women, free food, and in particular, free liquor, also did not hurt. His first major hoax, the Society for Indecency to Naked Animals, or SENA, which sought to, quote, clothe all naked animals that appear in public, namely horses, cows, dogs, and cats, including any animal that stands higher than 4 inches or is longer than 6 inches, began in 1959. It starred his friend Buck Henry, then an unknown actor, as the group's puritanical president, G. Clifford Prout. The campaign, which Mr. Abel intended as a send-up of censorship, proved so convincing that it found a bevy of authentic adherents, with SENA chapters springing up throughout the country. He also ran a fake presidential candidate, a woman who was known as Yetta Bronstein, a phantom Jewish grandmother from the Bronx, for president. It was called Vote Yetta and Things Will Get Better. He had campaign signs. People like... people tell me that Walter Cronkite is still mad at me, Mr. Abel told the Washington Post in 2016. He's not mad at Hitler. He's not mad at Castro. He's mad at me because I fooled him with a nude horse is a rude horse, which is one of their slogans for SENA.
Is that plagiarism if we name our show that today?
I think we could do it in honor of Mr. Abel.
I'll put it in quotes.
Far from courting material gain, the roguery that was Mr. Abel's life work appealed to be a highly personal brand of performance art, equal parts self-promotion, social commentary, study of the breathtaking naivete of the press and the public, and last but far from least, pure old-fashioned hijinks. A few hundred years ago, I would have been a court jester, he told the Cleveland Plain Dealer. His primary intent, Mr. Abel often said, was to give people a kick in the intellect. Again, the kicks included Yetta Bronstein, a phantom Jewish grandmother from the Bronx who ran for president in 1964, and at least once afterward on a platform that included fluoridation, national bingo tournaments, and the installation of truth serum in congressional drinking fountains. That was Yetta Bronstein's platform. The never seen in person Yetta was voiced by Mr. Abel's longtime wife, Jeannie, in a spate of telephone and radio interviews. He also did one called Omar's School for Beggars, a New York City institution founded amid the recession of the 1970s, which claimed to teach the nouveau poor the gentle art of panhandling. And he did this one in a black hood. He played Omar. The idea was because the economy is so screwed, we need to teach everyone how to panhandle effectively. So that was Omar's School for Beggars. There was the putative winner of the New York State Lotto jackpot in 1990, who was billed as a cosmetologist from Dobbs Ferry, New York, but who in reality was an actress. She poured champagne by the gallon in a hired Manhattan hotel suite and threw dollar bills from the windows as the news media salivated. The New York Post wrote a headline, $35 million and she's single, on the front page of the Post.
Oh.
This woman did not win the lotto. She was a creation of this guy, Mr. Abel, and the New York Post did not research that this was not a real person and ran with the story.
The Post.
The topless string quartet, in which Mr. Abel said an unsuspecting Frank Sinatra wanted to book a recording session.
Yeah.
The Ku Klux Klan Symphony Orchestra, which he said the failed presidential candidate and former Klan Grand Wizard David Duke briefly accepted an invitation to conduct. Anyway, it goes on and on. He basically was just he had something called euthanasia cruises for people who wanted to expire in luxury, and Citizens Against Breastfeeding, which argued that exposure to the naughty nipple in infancy caused a plethora of problems later on. He was just sitting around just making up these ridiculous organizations just to get people wound up, I guess.
It sounds like his targets have to do with like the idea of nudity and censorship and the body.
He also at one point passed himself off as a White House employee who supposedly had the missing 18 and a half minutes of the Nixon tapes. And there's a picture of him at a press conference with these two giant reel-to-reel tape machines where he's alleging to have the missing 18 and a half minutes. Born in Zanesville, Ohio, Andrew.
Oh, there you go. First in fraud. Ohio, first in fraud.
Anyway, sorry about that long digression.
Yeah,
that's
funny.
This guy seemed like he was kind of he was an interesting character. I know you're not into pranks, but these ones seemed to me like they were not just. I think he had a larger point in a lot of them, which I think is probably.
And they're just kind of funny. I mean, I guess that's the thing.
Right.
Like, generally speaking, I don't like pranks because I think prank culture, especially as we've seen it in kind of the modern era, seemed like pranks were really big, 15 years ago with the kind of modern era of prank shows. I know Jackass wasn't a prank show, but that style of kind of humor, I tend to roll my eyes at it. But, like, this sounded, like, legit clever. I mean, a nude horse is a rude horse. I mean, that I'm willing to get that tattooed, like, on my arm, potentially. That sounds so much like something I heard on Comedy Bang
Bang. What
about
pranking an elephant?
I'd prank an elephant. What about that time we tied two rabbits together?
That's great. Okay, let's see here. I'm going to find a song to play for our donors of the day, and I'm going to choose in the honor of a nude horse being a rude horse.
Oh, Band of Rude Horses.
I'm going to choose some Band of Rude Horses.
Nice.
And let's thank these fine, generous, non-rude people who have donated to us during the last TB Telethon, and they are making today's episode possible. And they are Ignatius Henschel, Nate Henschel of Seattle, Washington. We know Nate. Marilyn Avery of Canastoga, New York. I don't think I've ever been to Canastoga, New York, but it sounds refreshing.
It does, yeah.
And they're like, Canastoga? I feel like Canastoga was a seltzer water brand or something. Phil and Judy Barker of Yelm, Washington, where I don't know if Jay-Z Knight is still down there channeling Romptha, a thousands-year-old warrior. But that's one thing that happened in Yelm. Another thing that happened was Phil and Judy Barker lived there and donated TBTL. Clinton Perry of Charlottenlund, Denmark.
What?
What up, Denmark?
Hey.
We see you.
What's happening in Denmark these days?
Clinton. What's good?
What's good,
Clinton,
Denmark?
Hit us up. What's good in Denmark? What's good in Charlottenlund, Denmark? And then Anne Pequinot of Everett, Washington. Is that how you go with Anne's last name?
Pequinot?
P-E-Q.
I feel like it's French.
Yeah,
so I feel like you're not pronouncing Pequinot? The last T. Pequinot?
Anne Pequinot?
Anne
of Everett, Washington.
I believe.
Anne Worcester. Anne Clinton, Phil, Marilyn, and Ignatius, a.k.a. Nate. Thank you for supporting TBTL. Last night I was chatting with those tens that came out to Twin Sisters Brewery in Bellingham, and we were reminiscing because some of them have been listening since the day, like the early, early days of the show. And we're sort of reminiscing just about like how long the show has been going on,
and this episode.
I mean, exactly, and you know, just when I reflect back on, they were talking about the prom that we had back in the day.
Oh yeah,
I think listener, I forget who it was. Maybe it was Amelia was saying that she had really wanted to go to the prom and the schedule didn't work out. And it's like I had forgotten that we did a prom on this show, and then I was of course going down memory lane of all kinds of antics over the last 10 plus years, and it's shocking to me that this show still exists, just like it's shocking to me that we allow animals to just parade nude throughout our cities.
You allowed Andrew to join the show. I was like, that's fair but hurtful. Hey, speaking of Bellingham, really quickly,
a nude Andrew is a rude
oh
Andrew.
That's for damn sure. Really quickly, speaking of Bellingham, a listener suggested for a Hey Dummies, I don't think you would do this, that's why I just want to bring it up on the show, that there is a place in Bellingham called Casa Que Pasa, and they're famous for their potato burrito, and apparently went viral recently when Alton Brown visited,
They
want you to try it live on a Hey Dummies video. Well, that shit's not going to happen, certainly before the marathon, right?
Well, I don't know. Honestly, I feel like I've been eating slightly worse.
Oh, because
if that makes any
sense. You're burning it off.
I'm kind of like if I run a far distance on a certain day, I kind of feel like I earned it. I'm also, like I said, I've been laying off the booze juice. And so I also feel like, yeah, you know, if I'd had three glasses of wine, that'd be a half of a burrito's worth of carbs. So interestingly enough, this might be an okay time for me to do that. I'm going to be honest with you, and maybe I'll address this in the Hey Dummies video. I'm not one of those college types that'll talk your ear off.
I knew you were going to say that.
I've never been particularly intrigued by a burrito's selling point being the fact that it's the size of a 3-month-old baby.
Yeah, though, it's funny. The woman in this video who works there says it's about the size of a cat. I was like, ooh, that's not great optics.
I feel like I used to sometimes go to this place called Gordito's in Seattle, and I know they actually have a picture of like one of their burritos next to a very recently newborn child, and they're like roughly the same size.
Boo.
Or maybe the kid's just holding it. I'm not into, other than this podcast, I'm not into volume. I'm not into quantity over quality most of the time with my food. It's why I'm not beating a path to the Cheesecake Factory. I'd probably rather have something. I'm not saying this is Casa Que Pasa, by the way, but everybody swears by it. In fact, whenever Camaro Kev and his lovely wife Anita come to town, this is where Anita's from, basically, they have to go to Casa Que Pasa. It's part of the food ritual. And I've not yet been there, even though everybody's told me to go. And it's because when someone says they make a giant-ass burrito, I'm like, how about a small burrito that's delicious instead of it just being – now, maybe it's also delicious. I have not tried it. I will suffer for the art of Hey Dummies, and I will go down there and have one.
Well, you know what my problem with it is? I was watching the video. For me, that's – like, I'm not an anti-carb guy, but that is like – I like meat, right? So like replacing meat – I guess the potatoes on there are a deep-fried potato – and I was watching him make it, and I'm like, I could see that being good. But you know what? Because I'm not a cheese eater, I don't think without cheese that's very edible. That was one time where I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I see. Because it sounds so kind of dry to me. And I know, you know, I would load it with all kinds of sauces, which I'm sure you need to do anyway. But like when I was watching him make it, I'm like, yeah, I guess if I was a cheese eater and you load tons of cheese on there and it melts and that's where you're kind of getting the I guess cheese isn't protein, but that's where you're kind of getting like the non just straight up like dry carby stuff. Just otherwise, for me, it's just like beans, potatoes, and hot sauce. Like that sounds like a you know, just like a recipe for a farty afternoon. Excuse my language.
I'm laughing because I'm looking at the King 5 news piece on this.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's done by our friend Kim Holcomb, friend of the show.
Oh, it is? So. I didn't even – not on camera. I watched it, but it's all –
it's posted by Kim. I think it's maybe Alton Brown. Maybe they were just reposting Alton's video, but the article itself was
– No. It's a video. I watched the whole thing. They start with Alton, and then it goes, and they interview the young woman who works there, and she's the one who says it's about the size of a cat, and she's impressed because she was down in Florida, and somebody saw her Casa de – what's the name of the place again?
Casa Que Pasa.
Casa Que Pasa shirt, and they're like, oh, my God, burrito.
What up, house? What's up, house?
Yeah,
that's what Que Pasa means.
Yeah, it's
like
yeah. So the what up? Right? Maybe it's like the what up house.
Yeah.
All right.
Good. Okay. Enhance. Well, Anne, let's not get distracted from the fact that Ignatius, Marilyn, Phil, Clinton, and Anne supported the show, and that I will go down to Casa Que Pasa. I know that wasn't part of the Donors of the Day thing, but I will go down there at some point. What I like about this is that I will then get to eat this burrito, but I'll feel like it's a professional obligation. So that will quell some of my guilt about it.
You can write those calories off, if I understand it correctly.
Yes, you can. All right, thanks, you guys. Thanks for supporting TBTL. We would not be here without you. Did you ever have a Band of Horses thing, hang, phase?
No. When I hear of the band Band of Horses, I think of you because I first heard of them on TBTL. And for about, I'm going to say the past 10 years, I've been thinking, oh, yeah, I got to listen to them.
I don't know. Like, I love them very much, but I don't know if that's – they just happened at the right time in my life. Like, if I picked up their CD now, I don't know if I would – if I'd be crazy about them, maybe. But for me, it's very comforting music to listen to. It reminds me of isn't it weird how, like, and maybe this isn't for everybody, maybe it's just for me, but, like, I'm thinking about when I first started listening to Band of Horses, it was a very chaotic time in my life. I was living in New York, and I was in the midst of a breakup with my first wife, and she actually mailed me a Band of Horses CD. She said, I think you might we were still talking. It was just we were in a really weird place. And she said, you might find these guys interesting, but the CD broke in the mail. Like, this is the days of where you would mail someone a CD.
Yeah.
And the CD was physically broken. So I kind of never listened to it because it didn't work. But then sometime a few months later, I heard them and I was like, oh, my God. And I was like obsessed with them. And around the same time, I moved back to Seattle to be closer to where Addie was and was playing Band of Horses all the time. In the car, as Addie and I would drive around, and Addie was maybe, I don't know, like 11 or 12 at the time. And I would just listen to it. But it was still, you know, there was a lot going on in my life, and it was very chaotic. And I think about listening to Band of Horses, I think of it so fondly, even though when I think the circumstances of my life at that time were actually kind of up in the air, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess my point is, it's weird how you can look back fondly on a time in your life that, if you think about it objectively, was maybe not the most free and easy time. But I don't know if it's just that – is it that everything from 10 years ago feels like it was great because it was 10 years ago? Or is that just my kind of weird – I don't know. My nostalgia just blots out what the reality of my – if I think about any period of my life, if I think about being 18 and having Addie – I have like a one-year-old. I'm a freshman in college. I'm super broke. I have no idea what I'm going to do with my life. And I just think, God, that was such a great time in my life. Like, even though it was probably stressful. Or I think about listening to Band of Horses and moving between New York and Seattle and being in the midst of breakups and all of this shit. And I'm like, God, that was such a great time. Like, I kind of feel like I look back on every moment of my life in the rearview mirror as being like, God, wasn't that a great time?
See, I don't.
My current life, yeah. I hate. My current life is a disaster.
Oh, God, yeah.
That's not true.
I mean, your daughter grew up to be a monster. You're stuck in another dead-end marriage. Like,
no, but you know what? When people say – if people say, like, how's it going? You see someone you haven't seen in a while. If someone's like, how's it going? The instinct is to be like, great. But really what goes through all of our mind is, I don't know, I'm hanging in there. Like, I'm just putting one foot in front of the other. I think most people, that's the actual feeling we have inside. Assessing our life again, I'm really projecting a lot on other people, but I feel like most of us feel like a mix of happiness and sadness most of the time. And if someone's like, how's it going, we say it's great, because that's the sort of socially acceptable answer. But inside we're probably like, you know, I had to stifle the crying while watching a movie trailer the other day about Blaze Foley, so I wouldn't say awesome. But then if I look back on, like, if I look back on my current, like, if you give me 5 years, I look back on any period of my life, I think, God, those were the days.
See, I don't think those were the days. But I do think that there's something very human. I mean, it's almost, I think we use this analogy maybe a little bit too much, and maybe it's dubious, but that idea that, like, the body doesn't remember, our minds don't remember the intensity of pain. It's like a, you know, evolutional imperative, because, you know, childbirth is so painful that if you remembered that pain, you might do anything possible not to have more children.
That's
something
that's
that I've heard. And so I think there's something to that for psychological pain as well. I think that we have a way of saying, if nothing, I don't look back at tough times and think necessarily, God, those were the days. But I think, well, I got through that. And, you know, I think I'm probably – here I am now, and where I am is a good place. And if I hadn't gone through that, like, Vives and I, what would it have been? Going on 10 years ago, 8 years ago, Genevieve and I went through about a year of really – it was a really tough time for our relationship, and we almost didn't make it through it. And I don't look back at that like, those were good times. Those were really bad times. But
yeah.
I do look at it with the context of, like, God damn, I'm so glad we stuck it out and you know, got some help and got through it. And so I think about things in that way. So I don't know if that's really relatable to what you're talking about, but that's my own personal experience with it.
I think my body must just release massive amounts of Pitocin.
All the time,
because, like, I can think back to there, you know, specific days I can think of, like, just a really sucky day because of, you know, whatever was going on in my life. But if I think about everything else around that time, I don't look back on any time in my life as being like, man, that sucked. I always look back on it as like, my brain is oriented to just only remember mostly the good stuff. But it's also kind of oriented to be like in the modern day, like, yeah, I like it. I'm happy. I feel like I answer the question, how's it going, a lot with, I'm just like, it's going good. I'm just doing my thing, just working my jobs. And, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I don't feel, my body needs to maybe release less Pitocin in the rearview mirror and 5% more Pitocin side note, I don't even know if guys have Pitocin. I don't know if that's actually – if that exists in both genders or if that's just specific to women who are have had childbirth or given birth or whatever. But
you get it from bananas, I think. That's my understanding. That's exactly – that's the Mile High Club joke again. I'm just – you know what? Sorry. I'm done. You want me to turn off my mic?
If you missed your chance – to help out with Andrew's Million Mile Club joke, feel free to weigh in on his Pitocin potassium. You say Pitocin, and I say potassium.
All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says, sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I got to say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
All right, what do you got, my friend?
Here's something that I got, my friend. You were telling the story the other day of the town in, I want to say, it was in England somewhere where
there was Ipswich,
where there was a sound of in the middle of the night. Yes. The townspeople would hear the sound of children singing. It's raining. It's pouring. The old man is snoring. And it was very creepy. And it turns out it was part of a, I guess, a security system at a local. Was it a construction site? I want to say.
Basically.
Yeah. So anyway, we were talking about that on Monday, I think. And Danielle says, my daughter has a doll that for some unknown reason she adores. The doll has a button on its back that triggers the most disturbing child's laugh. On more than one occasion, my daughter has triggered the doll's laugh during the night in her sleep. It doesn't matter that I know it's just a doll. I wake up panicked each time. I've attached a video of the laugh. Everyone in the family, including my daughter, nice. Calls the doll creepy baby. Yeah, now this was a little bit tough. I had to clean this up, and my cleaning it up might have even...
Because the kid's swearing.
Yeah. Had to beep it. So here, take a listen to this. So just like let me calm down a little bit. Let's set the scene, okay? It's like 2:30, 3 in the morning. You're sleeping. The house is quiet, and suddenly you hear this.
Oh no.
Sweet dreams, everybody. How great is that? Oh my God.
That's some Twilight Zone shit.
Yes.
Right?
But yes.
Whoever makes dolls, I feel like they are well aware of the fact that a doll, any sound that a doll makes is going to be creepy because of, as we talk about on the show a lot, that sort of uncanny valley. This thing that's clearly fake making a sound that's supposed to be realistic. And that's why so many horror films revolve around dolls saying something that sounds like they've almost come to life. It's just an inherently fraught situation. So you got to really carefully, you got to listen to the sounds the doll's going to make from the perspective of like, is this going to be creepy at 3 a.m? And that laugh does not pass the test.
Yeah. I had to, she sent me another clip of the doll. This one, I think this one is less scary. Apparently the doll has a couple of settings.
That's a tuna, bro.
So sometimes that'll go off in the middle of the night as well, apparently.
Sometimes the doll will cross three lanes of traffic to pick up a Boston Red Sox related banner.
Here, let me tell you a good story. This comes from listener Bree. I think that's how you pronounce it. B-R-E-I-G-H. Bree.
I'd go with that.
Say. We were talking about another story. Domino's Pizza, at least the Russian chain of Domino's Pizza, was offering free pizza for life to people who got a Domino's tattoo. And we were talking about that. You said you would absolutely do that given the opportunity.
Man, I would still do that.
And Bree says, this is actually my brother's story, but I thought it was relevant based on the Domino's talk. My brother and his girlfriend lived in Europe several years back, and during a trip to Germany, they stopped at a bar where the menu said, free tattoo, free drinks, ask us how. This already sounds like a Burbank story to me. So my brother asked the waiter, and he explained that if you got the name of the bar tattooed on your body and your group's bar, if you got the bar name tattooed on your body, your group's bar tab was free for the night. Well, my brother, being the adventurous type who already had several tattoos, thought this was a great idea. So he agreed to the deal. According to him, they literally put a piece of plastic on the table they were sitting at. And someone, maybe the waiter or a bartender who also worked as a tattoo artist, came out and gave him the tattoo right there in the bar. Afterwards, they proceeded to then drink obscenely expensive drinks all night. He later contracted hepatitis C. I added that last part. The best part is that he told our, you know, that's made up. The best part is that he told our whole family, he's the oldest of five kids, by the way, I'm the youngest. He told our whole family of the adventure over dinner upon his return to the States. And the look on my mother's face as he stood up, pulled his pant leg up, and showed everyone the tattoo that said white trash fast food that was now on his calf was priceless. So apparently that's the name of the place, White Trash Fast Food. So anyway, she says, as you said, people get dumb tattoos all the time, so at least he has a good story for his power out Brie. For a tattoo that says White Trash Fast Food?
I mean, it depends on how big it is. I wouldn't have a problem with having that tattoo. I wouldn't go for the leg. I'm not a leg tat person. I love it like I'm getting on my high horse. I have 10 weird tattoos that are... Most people would be like, why would you get that? But I'm like, but I draw the line at getting it on my leg. But I would get – here would be the only issue with that. If you were going to get the tattoo and drink a bunch in the same night, you're asking for the tattoo to not heal correctly because your blood gets thinned by alcohol. And so you just like – you just know that even if the tattoo – and somebody did the tattoo in the bar at the table.
Yeah.
That seems – At that point, it's like lean into it. Just get a stick and poke, which is like a jailhouse tattoo. Just get a stick and poke that already looks crummy because it's going to look really crummy when you're all done with pounding a bunch of alcohol. But what a story.
Yeah.
What a story.
It's a great story.
I have to say, you're right. This does sound like a Burbank story. I would absolutely consider that if I were in a bar. So if anybody knows about any places where I can get free food or drinks by getting a tattoo from the place, I'm telling the listeners I'm very open to the idea.
What is the Bellingham drug front restaurant?
Siddiqui's. Big topic of conversation last night.
I believe
when we were hanging out at Twin Sisters. One of the listener I mentioned, Lisa and her husband, had been there for their anniversary once, but she said it was like 30 years ago. This is back when there was probably like five restaurants in Bellingham, and Siddiqui's was one of them.
Do you think that I could get sued for slander, libel, or even slibel if somebody from Siddiqui's heard me call it the drug front restaurant? Do I need to say the alleged drug front restaurant?
I mean, just to cover our butts, I wouldn't mind if you would.
Sure.
But I think the chances of Mr. Siddiqui hearing this are pretty slim. Those chances are as slim as the chances of me eating at Siddiqui's again.
Mm-hmm, right, or certainly drinking at Siddiqui's again.
Well, that was the problem. And that's what's so sad, that... Like, the food I had there was, you know, it wasn't the greatest restaurant food I've ever had. But really what let me down was he didn't know how to make a drink. Like, because I saw – this speaks to my kind of, like, inclinations. When I saw the restaurant from afar, I thought that's the kind of place where you can probably go sit in the – probably they have a bar. It's probably really dark. There's probably, like, three people in there who are always there. And you can sit at the end and watch SportsCenter on ESPN at 3 in the afternoon – and drink a really well-made martini. And I constructed a whole universe of the inside of that place based on that experience. And what happened was they didn't even have – not only did they not have a bar, the guy didn't know how to make a vodka soda. And so it isn't so much that they didn't have the food I wanted. They didn't have the alcohol I wanted.
Yeah.
So that put me off the place.
The thing is, though, if you go to a place like that, Luke, you don't want to order like really complicated drinks. Not to tell you – like not to blame you, but like – what was it? A scotch and soda,
it was a vodka.
Vodka and soda, like that's. I would start with something very simple, with just like a couple of ingredients and some ice.
Can I have a? Yeah. Can I have a sex on the beach?
That's what I was thinking too.
Can I have a mind eraser? Can I have a liquid cocaine?
Should I read one more email? I mean, we haven't done emails in a while. I got a bunch here. I like them all. I mean, it's like I got five fingers on each hand, but I wouldn't cut any of them off. I hate it when I say
that. Who said that?
I don't know. Like,
who said that about their kids?
Some comedian said that in the 90s, and it didn't even make sense to me, and I've been repeating it ever since. How about some celery advice? You were talking about how you like celery. You feel like it's much maligned.
Hey, did you see that there was celery going around the internet? There were some – I think The Onion did a – it was The Onion. Somebody did a something about celery. It was like the day after I decided to basically stop the show so as to – just make the point that I think celery is really underrated.
I didn't notice that it was all over the internet, but as we pointed out yesterday, I have not been spending enough time in the right places, like the front page of the internet, apparently. What was the internet going crazy about? Maligning it again?
I forget. No, I forget exactly. I'll look it up while you read this.
Okay. Anyway, this is just a little tip from Emily in Jacksonville, Florida. She says... she's been wanting to write in a lot, but she never has. But finally, we've hit on something that spurred her on, and that is celery, peeled celery. My husband introduced me to it a couple of years ago. He learned about it at Le Cordon Bleu. Fancy. I'm telling you, it's even – she said fancy, by the way. I'm telling you, it's even more amazing because you keep all the snap, but the stringy bits are gone. Just use your standard veggie peeler. Power out, Emily in Jacksonville. The thing is, I can't imagine that. I thought the stringiness goes all the way through. I feel like I just keep on peeling and peeling and peeling until I just had like a celery shiv.
Yeah, I'm still trying. I'm not able to find whatever the celery story was, but I wanted to just clarify with people. If you've seen celery in the news and you thought that we were biting their rhyme, quite the opposite. We were talking about celery when nobody else was. Although for some reason, when I look up celery, I see a picture of Lindsay Lohan on Twitter. I see a picture of Lindsay Lohan meditating at some kind of a health spa in Bali.
Huh.
So maybe that's what the story was about.
Can I tell you about something that I tried in my kitchen the other day?
Yes.
The story starts at Whole Foods. I'll tell the extended remix. I was at Whole Foods the other day, and I was picking up just a few things, and one of those things was a couple of heads of broccoli. I'm a broccoli guy. I like to have broccoli around at all times, because if you want a quick snack, you dip it in some hummus. If you want a meal, you can steam it. You can roast it. You can do whatever. It's just a very simple, healthy thing to have around. And so I'm buying my broccoli, and I'm really telling the long version. I'm buying my broccoli, and I notice that there's two kinds at Whole Foods. There's the organic kind and the regular kind. I ain't fancy, so I'm like, I just want to get the regular kind. And it's like a dollar difference a pound or something. So I grab a few heads of that stuff, and then I'm checking out. Actually, before I'm checking out, I notice, like, how am I going to indicate that I have the non-organic broccoli? Like, I don't want to go up there like sounding like a broke joker and just be like, don't charge me for the organic. But there was no way to like kind of indicate that I was buying the non-organic, and I didn't want to pay organic prices.
Sure.
What, my cheapness or what?
I'm saying that was bad planning on their part. There needs to be clear to the person checking you out if it's organic or not organic. Because I'm with you.
Yeah, it turns out it is. Because I asked the guy. I'm up there and I'm like, by the way, this is non-organic. This is the non-organic stuff. This is the regular stuff. He's like, yeah. Or he just said, okay, and he rings it through. And I said, by the way, would you have known that if I didn't tell you? And he's like, oh, yeah. It's very clear. He's like, the organic stuff has long stalks on it. Is that the right word? Stalk? No. Stem, I think. Broccoli stem. And it has like more leaves coming off of it. And this is the regular stuff, so it doesn't have that. So I can tell visually. And then he says, this is where the story really kicks into overdrive, my friend.
Okay.
He
buckling
says,
up.
A lot of people, he's like, they call these crowns. So it's pretty clear. Like, you're just buying the crown. This has very little of a stem on it. He's like,
No stems.
That's right. He's like, I don't know why people don't like the stems. I love the stems. I like to I like to roast them. I'm like, oh, yeah? He's like, yeah, it's really delicious if you roast them. So I come home with my mostly stemless broccoli. But, you know, he got in my head, Luke, and I start looking it up. I'm like, well, how would you go about roasting a broccoli stem? Now, have you ever done
this?
You'd
be like, look at this broccoli stem sitting over there thinking it's cool. You got roasted.
You know, people
broccoli
drive like this.
Out talking about they're talking about that they're high in fiber. Yeah, whatever.
Kids don't even like you. Anyway, so I come home. And so as I noted, there is not much of a stem on this broccoli that I have. But I do cut off all the little crowns. And I'm looking at the stem. And so I look up, how would I roast this if I wanted to? And they say, just peel it, like with a, you know, vegetable peeler. Peel the outside of it and then cut it up like into coins. You cut it like kind of against the grain.
Medallions.
Medallions. Better word there. And then you just put them on a sheet. And so I roasted the crowns. And then I also just threw in these medallions in a separate pan, flipped them over after 10 minutes. You know, I seasoned all of the celery with basically the same stuff, salt, pepper, olive oil. And then I put a little Cajun seasoning in there and some other things, just very light. It was delicious. Now, have you ever done that roasted broccoli stem?
Well, I haven't roasted them, but I'll tell you what, that whatever you would call that, the stem of the broccoli, and when you cut it into little, let's say, medallions and cook it, is one of my very favorite things to eat. Honestly, Carrie makes – throw a little broccoli by Dram in
oh,
here.
Oh, perfect.
Carrie makes this one kind of Chinese dish, I guess, that's like chicken and sesame seeds and other things, and it called for basically cutting – doing exactly what you're describing, except not roasting. This is like in a wok.
Mm.
You cut up the broccoli, you cut the stem of the broccoli into little coin sort of shaped things, and then you cook it. And it's the best part of the whole dish. I love it. You know why? It reminds me vaguely of celery. It reminds me a little bit of like also what is the a water chestnut.
Oh yeah.
I like, particularly in Asian food, I like those kind of crispy little. You know, I like the little mini corns.
Doodads.
I like water chestnuts. I like doodads. I like gizmos. And so, anyway, I will say to Carrie sometimes, "Hey, would you be up for making that Chinese thing you make?" And I always say, "And can we have the broccoli, whatever you call those things?" And it's basically exactly what you're describing, except instead of being roasted, it's fried.
Well, but I would recommend
I think
if you have
sleeping on the broccoli stock.
I think you're absolutely right, and I'm gonna. So now the next time I go. I am going to go and I'm going to find the broccoli because usually, you know, you pay
extra
by the
long.
Pound. And so I'm getting the stuff with the smallest stem on there. Now I'm going to be looking, digging around in there, grabbing the big stem because that's where I don't think it's better than the floret or whatever it's called, but it's really good. And I would recommend just try roasting it. I mean, it's such a simple thing and the texture changes so much. Again, I peeled the outside of it. So I think that might have helped. I don't know if Carrie does the same thing. But in the oven, that might get a little, I don't know what the outside would be like, maybe a little bit tougher.
I'm not
stringy.
A big roast vegetable. I'm not a big roasted anything person, oddly enough. Like, I mean, I like, a, you know, roasted chicken or something. But, like, I don't like the consistency of, like, a roasted squash or a roasted. I just don't really. That's not, for me, my favorite way to eat a vegetable. I like vegetables to be kind of al dente. Mm. I think I grew up in a house, peace and love to my mom, where vegetables were just boiled to beyond an inch of their life. And so everything was kind of a little bit like something was cooked because it was falling apart because it had been boiled so much that my reaction in adult life is I like everything to be a little underdone when it comes to vegetables.
Yeah, I mean, sautéed broccoli is obviously the best, but it's also, I think, a little, you know, at least when I make it, like if in a stir fry or something, it tends to be a little bit more greasy. And also, I just wanted to, or oily, I should say, but I also just wanted to try something new because essentially there's three things that I know to do with broccoli, right? Steam it. If I'm in a huge hurry, I'll just like not boil it, but put one of those grates in the bottom of the pan and just like steam it for like maybe 5 minutes. That's pretty good.
Right.
But we just do that all the time. And then you can saute it, of course, which I love. And sometimes what I do.
Or you can smoke it.
Or you can just smoke it. You just roll it up and you just light that. And it's like, man, 420. Love it.
hey, it's 419. Got a minute?
Exactly. Right. You know what I've been doing a lot lately? Are you trying to end the broccoli conversation?
No, I just try to swell some of my little Yachty and Dram instrumental reproduced by Christian Mason. From YouTube.
You don't have to do a whole stir fry. It was just before the show the other day. I was like, I want lunch. I want it to be healthy-ish. I don't have that much time. And I had like some leftover of that roast chicken, you know, just like that I got at the grocery store.
Yeah.
Had a little bit of broccoli. Just like chopped that shit up really quickly, like sauteed it in a pan really fast, threw in a tiny bit of stir fry sauce, which I know that's not low carb. That wouldn't be your jam. But like it was delicious. I had a little bit of like a little poor man stir fry right before the show. It was delish.
See, this is something I want to. I want to aspire to do more, and I want to ask myself, WWLD, what would Lewis do? Which is my nickname for you when you're not around.
That's my middle name.
In that you, like, you're good about just taking ingredients. We talked about this one time. You give yourself grief over your eating habits, but it sounds like what you normally do. If you're hungry, like, if I'm hungry, if I'm hungry sufficiently, I'll either get in the car and go somewhere and buy a big pile of fast food, or I will order a big pile of not great healthy food and have it delivered sometimes. And what you tend to do, it sounds like, is you kind of look around in the refrigerator like, well, what do we have? And then you make something. I don't think it's necessarily any more healthy, but I admire it. I think it's more resourceful of you.
I think I tell the stories of me being more resourceful on the show. I mean, I don't tell you about the hundreds of times I just literally jammed a half of a summer sausage in my gullet before going on the air. You know, that's less of...
Yeah,
I'm
but
not
that's...
As proud
see,
of that.
I would consider that to be... I mean, I guess I'm looking at all through the sort of lens of, like, is it low carb or not?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. Eating a summer sausage, it is high protein and it is relatively low carb, so that's not the worst thing. Like, to me, a less good food choice would be, oh, I just crushed a can of Pringles right before
oh,
we went on the
right.
air.
Yeah.
Like, if you're eating something that's high protein and relatively low carb, again, that just, based on my kind of food view, isn't like the worst thing you could have done.
But my family has a lot of heart issues. Like, this shit,
right.
I'm like 42 years old. Like, I'm cruising for a real bruising. As a matter of fact, I think I'm trying to eat all the summer sausage now, because eventually, like, every time I go to the doctor, I think this may be the one where they say, you're done. You're done eating meat, just fish and veggies from now on.
I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I was saying this to the folks last night who I got together with, because they were having dinner, and I ordered the vegan meatloaf at this place. And the other night when I was in Portland, I had seitan, which is a kind of a meat substitute.
Mm-hmm.
I had like fake buffalo. It was like basically pretend buffalo wings. But it was made out of a non-meat product, and they didn't try to shape them into being like a chicken wing on the bone. It was just kind of like, all I could say is it was sort of globs of something covered in buffalo sauce that you could dip in ranch, and I'll be damned if it didn't taste basically like you were having wings, but it was actually technically seitan. And I had that the other night. I got the vegan meatloaf option last night, which was delicious. This place called the Filling Station here in Bellingham, they have something called the Impossible Burger that we've talked about.
Oh, yeah.
That I said I wanted to try. Carrie and I did a side-by-side at the Filling Station. We got like a regular burger we would normally get, and then we got the fake meat one, and then we kind of swapped them to see if we could tell the difference.
Yeah.
And they had the exact same toppings on them.
Yeah? How have we not talked about this? I've been dying to hear this. So how'd it go?
It was good. I mean, I will say that the real meat was – it wasn't – I would say that the Impossible Burger was 80% of the way. So, for instance, if I was somebody who actually had a really strong moral feeling about not eating red meat and I was like, this is my new life, it would be a huge – like, it would be a great substitute.
Mm-hmm.
I found it to be at least 80% as enjoyable as if I was eating a real meat burger. But if you're somebody like me who's just a dilettante and I'm just kind of like – yeah, well, maybe I'll eat less meat. I didn't think it was quite as good as the regular burger, but it was definitely a reasonable substitute. And I guess my point is I'm still eating lots of meat and eating bacon and all that stuff. But I'm finding myself, when I look at the menu, considering the non-meat options with more seriousness than I used to, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, and just kind of being like, yeah, what if I did the thing that doesn't have meat in it? Like, and does that sound like it might be satisfying? And nine times, even down to when I ordered pizza the other day, I didn't get pepperoni on the pizza. Because I was like, my standard pizza order at all times is like pepperoni, black olive. But I also like onions on there. I like green peppers. And so this time I was like, you know, let me get black olives, green peppers, and onions or whatever I got. And I didn't realize till the end I hadn't put pepperoni. And I was like, you know what? This will taste pretty good, I bet. Now, granted, I also ate buffalo chicken kickers with it. So I'm not going to win any awards for ethical treatment of animals. That being said, I'm just finding myself slowly, gradually moving away from so much meat. And I don't know if in the long run, all those things that I'm eating that aren't meat are just – they're just giant carb bombs because all they are is some grain or something. But – so I may become much more pleasantly plump, but I may be somebody who actually eats fewer animals in the long run. And I don't know. I think it'll probably be a better choice.
Yeah, that's really nice. I should take inspiration from that because every time we have
check out the Impossible Burger. You might be surprised.
And there's one in our neighborhood too that's not Impossible Burger, but it's like very similar. I almost wonder if they're trying to draft off that popularity. They have a thing at Whole Foods, and Genevieve has gone back and gotten a couple of times. It's a meatless burger that is a
yes.
I can't think of what it's called. It's like Incredible Burger. It's very similar in name, but. Yeah, she really says it's really good. Kind of similar to you. Like, you know, there's a Rain City Burgers across the way. I mean, I'm sure that all things being equal, she'd rather chow down on a Rain City Burger. But she also definitely craves this other non-meat one. So anyway, I should
like if you told me if I went to the doctor and they said you can't eat hamburger anymore, I would be like, oh, OK. I'd be a little bummed because it'd be just like, oh, weird. I can't have that. But then I'd be like in the back of my mind, I'd go, yeah, this Impossible Burger was fine. Like,
yeah.
So it's definitely like if somebody is looking to make a transition and somebody's like, I just want to eat less meat or no meat, no red meat, but I still love burgers. I would highly recommend this. And I haven't had the one at Whole Foods, but I bet you those ones are pretty good too.
Yeah. All right.
I had an idea for a song.
Yeah,
to go
let's
out
do it.
With.
I got nothing.
I wanted to do the other day. Do you have a show title in mind?
Well, we could go with A Nude Horse is a Rude Horse, which I think is really funny.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe put
no
in
brainer.
Quote. I also wrote down sleep bragging, but that's no. I think Nude Horse is a Rude Horse. So, what's the song? I'll look it up on Spotify. We can play it from my end.
Well, when we actually, I meant to suggest this the other day when we talked about that story in Ipswich of the scary child singing. There's a song by Jarvis Cocker from the band Pulp, but on his solo record, I think it's called It's the End, but he actually uses the name of Ipswich, the English town of Ipswich. Okay. So what are the chances that we're going to have an Ipswich-related topic on the show?
Right. Let me see here. You think it's called what? Because the song isn't popping up, but his albums are.
Okay, what's his big... The is it the
about
the,
what era would this
the repeater
album.
What's the name of I'll find it in my iTunes.
Okay.
There's a let's see
2006
here, Jarvis Cocker
record maybe
not to be he also collaborated later with Jarvis Landry.
Oh really?
The album is actually called the Jarvis Cocker album, and the song is called
oh here it is from Auschwitz to Ipswich.
There you go. That's the one.
All right.
We also rarely have a show where we reference Auschwitz, so
no,
this is perfect.
Don't. Yep.
This is two for two.
Yeah.
So enjoy this Jarvis Cocker, and enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Thank you for listening, everybody. We will be right back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, go Mariners, go eat a bagel, and please remember to mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Not one single soul was saved. I was ordering an Indian takeaway. I was spared whilst others went to an early grave. Got stoned. Yeah, went out and got stoned.
That's a tuna, bro.